Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
At the end of the last episode, a source told us about a guy named Mike, allegedly at a dance with Dana, and a sinking feeling she had that Mike was going to do something very bad to Dana. And while you can't spend much time in the world of true crime without learning that, you should definitely listen to your gut. A sinking feeling is not evidence of wrongdoing, and it means nothing in the scope of Dana's murder investigation. At best, it's hearsay. If my source would have stopped there, however, we could write off the information as coming from an overexcited teenager wanting to be caught up in the drama of a local murder. But she didn't. Who told you his name was Mike?
Just some other people that kind of knew her, that were a little bit younger than me, that were more of her age. They told me because I had been telling them to watch out for this guy, that something was wrong. And then I think it was a guy that knew Mike. He said that, she is missing. You know, some guy named Mike was with her that night. And then I, you know, asked him, well, what did he look like? And then they told me, I said, yeah, that's the guy. I think he was going to kill her. And then next thing I know, they said, well, they found her. And they found her a few miles from that Wonderland Cave in Bella Vista.
My source wound up talking to a few other friends from Bella Vista, voicing her concerns about Dana and that night she supposedly saw her. And I need to point out, there was more than one person of interest the BCSO looked at named Mike. And Mike McMillan told me, I worked at the cave, but not until years after Dana went missing when I turned 21. No way I was there that night.
So they said, well, they hang out at the hill. What's that? And they said, it's up there at Bella Vista. They said, you go up there and you go past that grocery store about 2 or 3 miles, and then there'll be a little dirt road off to the left right before you go up a hill. So I drove out there and I seen this little road. It's like a Friday or Saturday night, because that's where they said people her age and them kids from Gravit hung out. So I drove out there. I guess they partied out there. It's like an open field. And there were four people out there. There was three guys and another girl. And I get out of the car And it's that same guy, Mike, again. This other guy that I knew that was a little younger than me, Dana's age, and then this kind of long-headed blondish girl. And I said, do y'all know Dana Stidham? Didn't she go missing around here somewhere? Those guys didn't say nothing. They were drinking beer, you know, out of cans. She says, yeah, I tell you what, you better leave here right now, because if you don't, she says the same thing's going to happen to you.
I asked my source the name of the girl on the hill, as we'll call her. As it turns out, she's someone Dana knew very well and was seen by several witnesses with Dana that night she disappeared. Unfortunately, I can't interview her. She died some time ago. After our conversation, I spoke to a detective and relayed this information. The detective knows this source, how she can ramble and how tempted I might be to write off what she says as hyperbolic nonsense. But the detective stressed to me, quote, don't discount what she tells you. After that warning from the girl on the hill, my source became unsettled.
And I went and got in my car and left. I was like, I got to get out of here because I don't know what they're going to do, you know. And I went and told a few more people about it. And they just said, well, the guy that was with Dana that night, he's friends with some dirty cops. So you don't want to get involved in it because they might do something to you. So about 15 years ago, I knew a guy who worked at the sheriff's office that I talked to a little bit about it.
I verified that she had told others about this. What she relayed to me next is the most disturbing part of her account. And you'll hear a name bleeped out. It's the name of a police officer.
What I understand is that Dana went out to the man cave in Bella Vista that night. The men decided they were going to trade off girlfriends, and they was going to have a sex party, and that they ended up getting in a fight, and a lover's quarrel broke out, and that Stidham girl got cut. And that told him to put her in his car or his truck, take her and bury her.
Previously on Paper Ghosts.
Yes, it was a young guy, close to his age, a policeman, and he really felt like he may have done it.
You don't have an intact body, but they found there was a nick on the collarbone that they felt like was from a knife. Now, whether she was stabbed, you know, in the neck.
Something in my mind told me that this guy is fixing to kill this girl. Oh my God, this is some kind of a murder.
My name is M. William Phelps. I'm an investigative journalist and author of more than 40 true crime books. This is season 4 of Paper Ghosts, The Ozarks. Cold case work for me has always been about gathering as much information as I can without judging it or allowing any bias to seep in. I collect the data, do some fact-checking, and see what shakes out. And before I decide on a line of inquiry, I like to know as much about a case as possible, far beyond the public record. So I kept calling people and reviewing all the documentation, which, let me tell you, amounts to a mountain of police interviews, witness statements, official reports, and various other documents associated with a case some 30-odd years old. All these sex party people my source mentions, that crowd Dana hung around? Well, for maybe obvious reasons, none of them wanted to speak to me about what they knew. Make of that what you will. I asked Dana's mother, Georgia Stidham, about the now-deceased girl on the hill. I've bleeped out her name, but that's who we're referring to in this exchange, and it's clear that Georgia remembers her very well.
And did she ever mention, or did you ever meet a...
Yes, and you do not want me to tell you what I think of...
Tell me.
I think the bitch had a lot to do with it, and that a bitch is exactly what she was. She came in and told me that she was only 19, and she was working with Dana down there at the store. And now she was still in school and everything, but she had one son that lived with her mom and dad. And she was lying all the way through. She was married and she had the one son. That was the only truth in it.
So what kind of person was she? Was she a drug addict?
She was a bitch.
I got that she was a bitch.
She was. She was smart-mouthed and... She wanted to be a big person and doing things, I guess, and she couldn't quite carry it off.
Was she into drugs, dope, that sort of thing?
Yes.
What kind of drugs?
All kinds, from what I've understood.
Do you think she was dealing drugs, too?
Yes, I know she was dealing. Dana had told me that.
The girl on the hill, along with two other girls Dana knew, were said to be muling drugs from Texas into Arkansas. Information I found in a police report and an interview with her. In my experience, at this level of drug dealing, transporting quantities of dope over state lines, a federal offense which can get you decades in prison, the stakes become very high. Could Dana have seen something she wasn't supposed to?
And she'd lie and lie and lie just to get Dana out. Dana was on her way to her house.
And you're talking about when?
That night.
I ended up verifying this with three other sources. Next, I needed to understand what Georgia thought about Mike McMillan. Detectives Danny Varner and Mike Sidoriak would not let go of Mike. Detective Sidoriak had told the reporter, quote, "We want to show that our victim was in McMillan's vehicle." Referring to that hair found in Mike's truck, which, along with one of Dana's hairs and George's DNA, had been submitted for testing. If you recall in a previous episode, the BCSO was focused on the idea that if Mike McMillan had stolen Dana's grave marker, then that behavior somehow spoke to his guilt.
So when you heard about Mike McMillan taking the grave marker from your daughter's grave, what was your first thought?
That he was a little chicken shit.
Why chicken shit?
He went down there and he took something from a little dead girl. And I didn't like the little thing anyway. I don't like Mike McMillan. And I can't stand his parents.
Why do you think he did it?
Because he's chicken shit. And that's just the truth of it. He thought it made him look big.
If Mike McMillan had been involved in Dana's murder, I think the last thing the guy would want to do is steal the marker from her grave. If he was feeling nostalgic or upset, or as Georgia said, wanted to show off, well, that would make more sense to me. Law enforcement seemed to be taking advantage of this situation in order to keep someone in their crosshairs, and that person was Mike. Still, they weren't the only ones who thought Mike knew more than he was saying.
Did you ever consider him a suspect?
Yes. I still think he knew who it was, where they had her and everything else. And I probably always will.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elia Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow, thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When new information from a case comes in, I compare it to what I've learned up until that point. A new thread can pop out of nowhere, and things can start to make sense. Or not. Sidoriak and Varner were dialed into Mike McMillan, but they also continued interviewing scores of other people. Mike eventually married and moved far away from Bella Vista. Here's his ex-wife, who we met in the last episode. And so when you guys, you know, as the time went on, did law enforcement ever contact him again?
Yes, they actually came and interviewed me first. They took him, they had him for like 6 or 8 hours, showed him pictures, you know, the whole graphic, how they do it. And he was pretty shaken up after that because it's not something you want to see. So, little background, my stepdad was a chief of police in the town where we lived. So I grew up around law enforcement and all that. They showed up at my work, two detectives, and asked to speak to me. They asked me if Mike had any kind of personal possessions at the house that had like pictures of ex-girlfriends and things like that. And I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, everybody kind of has something like that from high school that you kept your notes in or your little mementos. And they were like, oh, well, have you ever seen this purse and this? And I'm like, no. And they asked if they could take it. And I was young and naive, and I told them yes. So they went to my house and got that box. They interviewed Mike shortly after that.
And he was shaken up about them coming again.
He was just playing these pictures that they said were Dana out in front of him. It would shake anybody up, but he's like, I didn't do it. I don't know who did it, you know.
I was able to obtain the recording of this marathon interview. Detective Danny Varner begins.
Sure as hell don't deserve ending up like she did.
No, she does.
Her little skeletal remains, that's it. Her folks still don't know. But God does, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. That's what I'm counting on.
The audio in that previous clip has degraded over time. But Detective Varner says, little old skeletal remains, and that's it. her folks still don't know, but God does, don't he? And Mike McMillan responds, yeah, he does. That's what I am counting on. Varner then used a carefully chosen tactic by trying to align Mike with the harshest criminals strategically, in my opinion, to scare him.
Mike, we interview people all the time. We've interviewed murderers, rapists, burglars, child molesters. And watching you here today, you've got the gestures in that seat. And you're cool. I'm going to say one thing right now. You're cool. You've learned to live with this. And it's been your lifestyle. And it makes it easy.
What's that?
By the way you talk. And by the way you deny. You're our man.
They accuse him. They put tremendous pressure on Mike to admit he killed Dana. But he continues to say what he has always said, even interrupting them at times to stand up for himself.
And you know we got you, Mike. And it's going to look a lot better on you. You just say, listen.
I didn't do it.
I think you did.
I didn't. If you put me in jail for it, you get the wrong guy and somebody got away.
Then Danny Varner does something we don't expect upstanding officers to do. He lies.
I don't think so, man. I don't have somebody else's fingerprint in the car.
Well, you got somebody else getting away with murder.
The BCSO did not have Mike's fingerprints inside Dana's car. They had no fingerprints, in fact. Lying, however, is totally within the boundaries when you're interviewing a suspect. And I understand why detectives sometimes do it. This interview was conducted close to the time Mike willingly gave his blood and hair for DNA comparison. As I stated in an earlier episode, people like to put a face on evil. It helps them deal with the pain and loss. But as Mike McMillan told me, they decided that I had done this, and that was it.
Don't both of you get stuck on me. Because there's somebody that did it.
I agree with that. It's been done. We didn't have your old tell us that Mike McMillan did it. You did it by himself.
Varner then gets into the grave marker Mike was arrested for stealing.
Tell us how long he was out there.
About where?
At the cemetery.
Could have been 5 minutes, could have been 5 hours, I don't know.
What do you think?
Why does it matter?
It doesn't matter.
This night, of course, had been years before. As the interview continues, they talk about how Mike's alibi fell apart when they interviewed the girl he claimed to have been with that night. They talk about how the truck Mike drove was his dad's, and it fit the description they had of the person parked behind Dana that morning. Evidence that was all highly circumstantial at best. They then focused on a picture of Dana they found inside Mike's house.
Well, I'm still there, huh? Sure be. I'm taking it out. That's not a crime either. Not good.
What's that?
Well, I know I screwed up by taking the little marker deal, but I don't understand how, even after I walk in and say, hey, look, I did it, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do it, you know, I was stupid for doing it. That's basically what happened. Mike asked me whether or not I knew who took the marker, and I said, yeah, I did it. And then he says, well, hold on, we need to read you your rights. I remember that perfectly, because that's important to me. I got arrested that day. I mean, from
throughout
there,
this entire interview, they kept ratcheting up the pressure on Mike. At one point, they raised the idea of capital felony murder charges, which brought in the possibility of the death penalty. This approach, which potentially crosses a line into intimidation, was specifically designed to scare Mike into a confession. But Mike kept insisting that he did not kill Dana.
So bringing prosecutor in here wouldn't make no difference. about to get me to confess to something I didn't do it in.
Were you with her at all that night?
No.
Could you have been with her? Could you take her for a ride someplace?
No.
Varner got into the polygraphs they had given to over a dozen people by then. Mike had taken one during the early days of the investigation and passed. Years later, he took a second one. During the second polygraph, he was asked if he was with Dana the day she disappeared, if, at the time Dana was killed, he did anything to cause her death, and was he present when Dana's body was left in that creek bed. Mike answered no to each question. In the official report, the polygraphist said the results created, quote, such a pattern as to indicate he was deceptive in answering all of the relevant questions. When asked about his responses and how he'd scored on the test, Mike said, quote, sometimes I think I did kill Dana. But I know I didn't. The polygraph examiner concluded that, in his opinion, Mike was responsible for the death of Dana Stidham. During his interview with Sidoriak and Varner, the two detectives brought up that failed polygraph.
How come they all passed and you can't?
Same questions. Same time. That's me.
I didn't have anything to do with Dana Stidham's death.
If you were to read press reports only about Mike McMillan, you'd walk away feeling that he was hiding something and possibly committed this crime. But listening to him in these interviews, how direct and sharp he is, not one bit nervous, it's clear he is emphatically denying any involvement. This, mind you, as he is poked and prodded and accused of it over and over for years and years. He sticks to his story and never wavers. They thought they could break me, Mike told me when I interviewed him. Throughout the police interview, Mike continues to repeat himself.
I didn't have anything to do with Dana Stidham's death.
Did you ever do anything together? By yourself, just the two of you?
No, not really.
Did you ever ask her?
No.
Go to the prom? Go to the... No. Dance? Did you have dances up there? Did you ever go to the dances at the gym or at the Civic Center?
Yeah, I used to. Every now and then.
Did you ever dance with her there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Such benign questions, which have very little to do with evidence, and everything to do with tunnel vision and closing a case. I obtained the FBI report from the hair blood analysis, the only forensic evidence in Dana's case the BCSO says it has. And here's a quote from it. The DNA sequences from the hair and specimen from Georgia Stidham are different. Therefore, Dana Stidham can be eliminated as the donor of the head hair found inside Mike McMillan's vehicle. The BCSO had no forensics to back up what I would call a very weak circumstantial case against Mike McMillan. The case, including the second polygraph, which Mike allegedly failed, was sent to the district attorney. Mike McMillan has never been charged. But why? After trailing him and pressing him for years? The simple answer is they had no evidence against him. Because no matter how much the BCSO believed that Mike McMillan had murdered Dana, they didn't have any tangible proof to support such an accusation or make it stick. Here's former Benton County prosecutor Nathan Smith, whom you've heard in previous episodes.
Sometimes in cases, there's too many suspects and they all look good, right?
Part of the problem with that is if you have one or two other pretty good suspects, that's almost by definition reasonable doubt. And so when you have multiple suspects out there from a time where it was difficult to collect the kind of evidence we get today routinely, that can be a problem. I can't imagine the pressure in 1989, 1990 to make an arrest, to make the arrest. And I actually think, looking back, that the investigators who worked on it at the time probably should be commended for not making an arrest, simply because if the evidence isn't there, you don't want to start the process.
Now, just stepping back a minute to the murder scene or where the body dump site. So was there evidence there? Any type of evidence that could lead to somebody? Like, is there something to test if, you know, you develop a good suspect?
Well, I guess at this point, I've got to be careful not to, you know, get out in front of the skis of the actual investigation. But certainly anything that we have today, it becomes easier and easier going forward to do those kinds of testings. Now, the real issue is, if you're referencing DNA or whatever, and let's just say in a normal case, is was there DNA evidence preserved that can be tested today? But you got to remember, 1989, that wasn't a thing people were
That's
doing,
right.
Right? They didn't think about doing that. So I think it's really going to be just leaning into the facts more and trying to uncover any additional information.
Although Mike McMillan somewhat faded from the public picture as a suspect, the BCSO were still searching for a piece of evidence that could tie him to the murder, which they would never find. And yet, the entire time the BCSO was pursuing Mike McMillan, there was a different suspect they had their eye on, a guy unknown to the public, a much better suspect, who was being looked at once again when, all of a sudden, Dana's case took a remarkable turn.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's impossible to overestimate the depth of loss a family experiences when a young person is murdered, or the feelings associated with that loss as they manifest in increments over time. You see, grief is universal. It comes in five stages: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance, with pangs of guilt being an unofficial sixth. Dana was 18 years old. She missed out on so much life, but even more than that, she was missed. Time doesn't change that. And I think law enforcement, especially, must be careful when a case runs cold. What they do, what they say, what they don't say, how they respond to suspects, and undoubtedly to victims' families. Dana's cousin, Christy Smith, put it quite sincerely to me.
It was a loss, a lot of family that was very sad and very worried and very confused. The police didn't seem too worried still. It just seemed like there was a lot of things that should have been done that wasn't, that I don't believe was handled correctly. Like, they only kept her car for a few days and then they gave it back to her parents. I mean, if the last place she was known to have been was in her car, why would you not keep the car, you know, for future reference?
Right.
I think it was just, you know, I don't believe that our police departments at that time were handled a case like this.
As investigators continued to re-interview co-workers and employees at Phillips Grocery, a name emerged. A name that had been there all along. He's never been mentioned publicly in this case, so I'm going to call him Jack Linney. A local, older guy with a reputation for not only hanging around Phillips Grocery daily, but sexually harassing women throughout his entire adult life. And by reputation, I mean a documented trail of serial sexual harassment of the worst kind, wherever this dude went. By the time I met investigative journalist Brandon Howard in 2023, he had done a lot of work on Jack Linney. And to be clear, this is not the same man from earlier in the podcast, the guy I referred to as the pervert who liked dirty magazines and lived up near Wellington Road, close to where Dana's car was found.
Well, there was another suspect at the store who worked in the area and was sexually harassing some of the women. But beyond the harassment in the store, he was also following them on the highway, and he had a long history of picking up hitchhikers, harassment at other stores in the Bella Vista area, and vehicles that seemed to match more closely with what witnesses reported seeing behind Dana's vehicle the day she disappeared, that made me way more interested in him and how little he was fleshed out.
Brandon means, and I agree, that this suspect was not pursued anywhere near as aggressively as Mike McMillan, which raises the question, why the hell not?
Let's talk about him for a minute. What's his background like?
This is a person who's well-educated, has, I would say, a few degrees, but works way below their station, does lots of construction jobs, can't keep jobs very long, had actually been in the teaching profession, but potential harassment incidents also derailed that career. They were also the victim of a major brain injury that seemed to unencumber their potency for sexual deviancy and self-control.
So you're saying the suspect had a brain injury and ever since then has been out of control with sexual harassment and even sexual assault?
Sure.
I mean, you know, I'm looking at the timeline you created, and what just blows my mind is it's not one, two, three girls over a period of time. It's five, six, seven, eight who don't know each other.
Definitely.
Telling the same story about this one guy.
Voracious appetite is the best. I mean, he's insatiable. It seems that no woman or job or building, as in a grocery store or outlet he frequents, has not had a story of some unnerving incident of harassment or behavior we would consider stalking. I would consider stalking.
I mean, this isn't catcalling. This is way beyond that sort of thing.
It's frightening. It seems, you know, like someone... It seems to check all the boxes for a sexual predator. Going into the store with a hood on their face, standing behind the women, ogling them, making circles around the store, sneaking up behind them, waiting for them in the parking lot after work, following them on the highway, trying to pull them over, in some cases groping them.
You start looking into this guy. And one of the things that I do is I look to exclude people. With this guy, can you exclude him from Dana's case?
I would argue no. The best exclusion probably would have been his alibi, which initially was that he was not in the area and that he was at a family reunion. That's refuted by the evidence that they found that he worked the week of Dana's disappearance in Bella Vista, a full work week, I think even some overtime. Now, the biggest detraction is that most of the sexual harassment, if not all the sexual harassment incidents at the store, occurred in 1993, 4 years after Dana's murder. But we know he was in the area in 1989.
I began looking deeper into this dude's life, talking to my sources in Benton County and beyond about him. I also heard there were recorded interviews the BCSO had done with him about Dana's case, which I set out to find. Each source I spoke to, many of whom you'll soon hear in the podcast, knew Jack Linney very well, including no fewer than five in law enforcement. And every single one of them said the same thing. Linney could most certainly be responsible for Dana's murder, but also additional homicides throughout the Ozarks. And wouldn't you know, as Linney's name pops up on the BCSO's radar in late 1990, something happens. Something incredible. Something changing the entire dynamic of Dana's case. It's December 2nd, 1990. An elderly couple, Linda and Randy Groller, are walking along Oscar Talley Road, just east of Indian Creek in Anderson, Missouri, only 20 minutes north of Bella Vista, where Dana's body was found the previous year. The main route near Oscar Talley Road is 59, or North Main Street. Oscar Talley is off that. The Grollers live in a small house near the end of the road.
And we had came home, got our dinner going in the oven, and we went for a walk because I have back problems. So one of the deals is take a hike. And we went for a walk, and we were picking up cans for the church to sell for our siding, aluminum cans. You know, you do what you can. And on the way back, we were just within maybe a block and a half of the house. It was just around the curve up there. It was a deserted house.
That deserted house was on its last legs, just waiting for the right gust of wind to come along and flatten it.
Anyway, the grass had grown and the leaves, everything had been knocked down. And Randy told me, he says, let's look in this grass because it's kind of windblown and stuff. And maybe we can find some cans in here. And I said, okay. And then he says, Linda, I see a skull. I says, oh, surely not. But I went back there with him, and we saw the skull. And then on further looking, we could see the rest of the body on the kind of a lean-to on the old house on a concrete slab. We could see the rest of the body.
If you are enjoying Paper Ghosts, check out my weekly podcast, Crossing the Line with M. William Phelps, wherever you get your favorite shows. Coming up next on Paper Ghosts.
The skull was detached from the body
and the rib cage was detached from the body. You know, the only clothes that was on the body that we found was where the pelvis and legs were, and tennis shoes. She had tennis shoes on.
He can validate there was a party. He can validate that the kids said there was a scream.
I'm not tooting my horn here, but I'm not apt to give up on it. And I have reason to believe that it will be solved.
Paper Ghosts Season 4 is written and executive produced by me, M. William Phelps, and Catherine Law. Script consulting, Rose Bocci. Audio editing and mixing by Brandon Dickert. And sound design by Matt Russell. The series theme, number 442, is written and performed by Thomas Phelps and Tom Mooney.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.